Hey, welcome to the Damage Report. I'm pretty sure this is the closest to the beginning of the show that everything's been in place since the show started. I'm Brett Ehrlich, in for John Iadarola. You know who else is in for John Iadarola? Brooke Thomas.
Da-da. Hi, hi, hi. It's been a wild one. It's been a wild one, but we're here. Yep. Our voices are clear.
Our minds are clear, can't lose, or something like
that. Can't stop, won't stop.
My outfit today, I would like to say, is inspired by Andrew Yang, but the real reason.
You look nice.
I hate the way I look, I guarantee it.
You look really nice, though.
It has been such a crazy week here at the Young Turks. We've had, as you've noticed, John away, Cenk away. Cenk came back, John suspiciously still absent. If you see him, please tell us where he is. We would like to know. Just kidding. He'll be back Monday.
Yeah.
Getting some well-deserved 48 hours off, I believe, is the grand total.
Yeah, he's at a board game
convention. No, there's no way that's possible. John?
Playing Candyland, Monopoly,
Sorry, it's a little ironic that that's what he's doing right now.
No. Go for Broke. Did you ever play that as a kid?
No, I didn't.
It was like a 1970s game. We had like an old version because I lived with my grandma.
Mm-hmm. Right,
and
exactly.
I used to play it. Yeah. How are you doing? Because you drank a triple espresso this morning.
I accidentally hit the triple cappuccino button on the machine. And so we'll see. It's in my bloodstream.
You drank the whole thing, though.
Making my way. I don't know. I'm going to have to go out and get it depending on how well we do. But we do have a lot of news to get to today. We have the breaking news that we'll start off with, which is Eric Garner. New developments in that case. But the other things we have on the show, Trump's going after Elijah Cummings again. This in the wake of Elijah Cummings actually being the victim of a crime, and Trump felt the need to go after him for that. We have a firsthand account of a protest that took place in Congress, in the halls of Congress. We have someone who was there and part of the organization that is taking a stand against the climate crisis. In addition to that, we have some more police brutality stories, as well as a more cultural story about ridiculous hair rules that are wildly, seemingly racist. We'll have the discussion about that at certain schools. So, without further ado, let's get into the first story. So there have been developments today in the Eric Garner case. Now, this is a case that started in 2014. And over the course of the next 5 years, there has been a lot of frustration, a lot of pain and anguish from the Garner family trying to get justice. And there has been some developments, if not total justice today, and it is this. A judge, as part of a disciplinary trial, that judge recommended that they do actually fire the judge or the police officer, Daniel Pantaleo, who is responsible for the death of Eric Garner. The judge found Officer Daniel Pantaleo, who has been on modified administrative duty in the years, not the months, not the weeks, the years. Since Garner's death on the Staten Island street corner, guilty of using a chokehold on the 43-year-old father, which is banned under NYPD policy. Defense attorneys had argued that the move Pantaleo was using and seen using was not an illegal chokehold, so a chokehold's illegal, but a department-approved takedown move used to subdue suspects assisting arrest. And that his arm was not around Garner's neck when he said repeatedly, "I can't breathe, I can't breathe." He said 11 times, and it has kind of become the mantra of this fight against police brutality. It made its way to the NBA, but where they wore shirts saying, "I can't breathe," just as an example of one of the places where this went. But Brooke, what do you think of this development that the disciplinary trial judge said he recommended that the man be fired?
Of course he should be fired, because not only did someone die, but he was using a chokehold that, by all accounts, except for his, was banned by the department that he worked for. And so this isn't only about justice for a family who tragically has lost, you know, not only their son in this, but their granddaughter in this. The mother, Eric Garner's mother, has lost her granddaughter, her son, her husband in the wake of this tragedy. It's been a really sad 5 years for them, but also for the safety of the people the NYPD is supposed to protect. If you have someone on your force that used a chokehold that has been banned, and then not only doing that, but so that's just breaking a major rule. And then also it caused the death of someone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they shouldn't, that's not safe.
And we do have the third video that I wanna go, is the third video that we have listed. This was 2 weeks ago, essentially, when the Department of Justice, the federal prosecutors, did an investigation into whether they should bring charges, whether they be civil rights charges or criminal charges against Pantaleo. And here is just 2 weeks ago, essentially, what the Department of Justice said.
At this point, there is nothing in the video to suggest that Officer Pantaleo intended or attempted to place Mr. Garner in a chokehold. I would also note that there was a significant difference in size and weight between Mr. Garner, who stood 6'2" and weighed close to 400 pounds, and Officer Pantaleo, who was considerably smaller.
So this is one of those things that comes up time and time again, right, which is, you know, he's just bigger. He's not really a person. He's more of a monster.
Mm-hmm. Big black man, mm-hmm, of course, who was down underneath the officer that did have his neck inside the officer's, the cranny right here of his arm.
Yeah, as you're seeing in this video right here, it is. Originally, he was brought back, and then they have so many people on top of him forcing his head into the concrete. It's just ridiculous and sickening. So what happens next? Is this the final justice in the case? No. Is the guy going to be fired? No. Next, both Pantaleo's attorney and attorneys for the Civilian Complaint Review Board, as reported by the local affiliate in NBC, which prosecuted the case, will have an opportunity to meet with the judge to discuss the decision before it goes to NYPD Commissioner James O'Neill, who will ultimately make the decision on the officer's future. The attorneys have up to 2 weeks to do that. Then the departmental judge sends her final findings to O'Neill, who will then decide whether to fire Pantaleo or not.
Whether he did this intentionally or not, if you break a rule accidentally that ends in somebody's death, you can't be a police officer.
Really, any other job.
Right.
If you did this, right, they would say, I'm sorry.
And we know your
people
heart
would
and
still
we
be
love
alive.
You, but you can't work here anymore.
Yeah.
Right, like that would essentially be, if we even want to believe that, but it's for 5 years, that's what's been the debate.
Mm-hmm.
And that's frustrating because this person has been being paid with taxpayer money,
mm-hmm,
a good salary, mm-hmm, for 5 years, still on the force. And this is a problem.
Yes, I would like to go to video two. Mm-hmm. This is, you may have noticed during the debate that happened, I think 2 days ago now, this came up because people were chanting fire Pantaleo to Bill de Blasio. We actually caught up with the protesters outside the venue. Asher actually shot this interview where he answered why he was protesting.
He wants to get up and proclaim himself to be a progressive. Well, show us your progressive credential. Don't sit there and say you wanna create a more equitable society for everyone while back at home you're allowing police officers to kill without any recourse or accountability black men. And that's not going to happen. Eric Garner was choked to death after having screamed out, I can't breathe 11 times. And this man was the mayor when it happened, and he's the mayor today, and he's allowed Daniel Pantaleo to continue to enrich himself and to get richer and richer off of our dollars. And now he wants to export that across the country. It's not going to happen.
That's Reverend Foy, who was part of the Arc of Justice. And then he and some of the founders of the Women's March, and then my son, who's a rapper who was actually on the Young Turks once, was there in the venue. And so just the idea that he continues to get paid during all of this on modified administrative leave, whatever that means.
And the police has to answer for this. It's been 5 years, and I haven't heard him say he needs to be fired. I've heard him say that, his hands are tied, the Justice Department asked them to wait, that this and this. It has been 5 years.
Yep.
And Kirsten Gillibrand, who also is in New York, had more to say about this than the mayor, who part of his platform that he's running for president on is the problems that situations like this cause, as if he's not in a place to do something about it.
Yeah, during the debate, they asked him about it, and he said, well, we are very frustrated, and finally we waited. They said that the federal prosecutors told us to wait, and only now, he said, within the next 30 days, and we outlined the this series of events that have to unfold in order for this person to get fired, which is just absolutely shocking. One final detail is the family of Eric Garner was awarded by the city a financial settlement in the wake of it. Mm-hmm. But again, there's not been any actual justice. The idea that this person is still being paid by the state, not to mention all the legal bills that the family has to undertake on the way there.
Right.
Okay, we got to move on to another story that has broken this morning in the wake of all this talk about Baltimore and Elijah Cummings. So Elijah Cummings is a representative from Baltimore, Maryland, and Trump has relentlessly been attacking him on social media in what seems to be quite a racist onslaught. There has been a development in this where there was a report that Elijah Cummings' house was broken into by a burglar. And here is what Elijah Cummings had to say about it. I was notified of the intrusion by my security system, and I scared the intruder away by yelling before the person gained entry to the residential portion of the house. So that happened. That is Elijah Cummings' response to this. But of course, the president had to chime in with his response to it. And he said this, really bad news. The Baltimore house of Elijah Cummings was robbed. Too bad. What is happening here? This is one of those things where you should say the decent person, first of all, did not chime in and say these horrible things like Trump has said, which we'll show you in a second. But to say too bad, he does not mean too bad. Usually you should say our heart goes out to him. I hope he's safe and that nothing bad happened to him. But this is very clearly him saying, oh, that's too bad. I'm sorry you got broken into as I portray you and the people of your city as rats.
Yeah, it's also dangerous because we have proof that multiple people have attacked what they perceive as enemies of the president, you know, because of their support for this president. And I'm not saying that this is very clearly, you know, him trying to incite violence. That's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is I think that when you know that people loving you and things that you have said are easily misinterpreted and put other people in danger, it is your responsibility to be extra careful about what you say and what you put online as a public figure. And that doesn't feel careful to me.
Yeah, it feels careful in that it is a very carefully crafted message that says, oh my gosh, that's too bad.
Right.
And so that when you go after him and you say, by the way, it seems like you're inciting violence, he's like, no, I'm not.
Right.
I just said it was too bad. What a shame. And if you need any proof that Trump is inciting violence in his supporters, you need look no further than video that has emerged recently in the wake of his rally in Cincinnati yesterday. There are two people, one punches the other. I'll give you three guesses as to who punched who and what side they were on. Take a look. So, I mean, that happened. And that was a Trump supporter who got out of his car and just punched someone who was protesting violence, who was protesting the Trump side of things.
Yeah.
Horrible.
It was horrible. That was horrible.
Yeah. I don't know what to say about it other than this continues and it can't.
Very clearly, and that I think the person who is the leader of this country and is supposed to be the president for everyone in this country should be angered and upset by things like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. It needs to speak out against these things. That was an elderly man. Exercising one of his constitutional rights.
And I think and the one thing you do not have a right to do is punch that person.
Yes.
And it just seems to me it's like everything is so basic and so over the top at this point.
Yeah.
Because there was just a guy getting out of his big red truck and punching someone in the face. And that's who the president continues to embolden and encourage in the wake of all this.
Yeah.
Anyways, we have to take a break. When we come back, we have someone who's involved in a protest in the halls of Congress. And we'll give you a firsthand look at what happened as one of them seems to have been assaulted by a member of Congress. Don't go away. We need to talk about a relatively new show called Un-F-ing the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies.
debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of On the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
The climate crisis grows worse and worse every day, and many organizers are fighting back against it. We have one of those organizers with us today who is involved in a protest in the halls of Congress. This is Caitlin Saposi-Belknap, the National Director of Move to Amend. Caitlin, welcome to the show.
Hi, Brett. Thanks for having me on.
It's great to have you here. Now, before we get to video of this protest in Congress, which is just fascinating and traumatic, but also powerful at the same time. Tell us a little bit about your organization and what you're fighting for.
Well, so just to be clear, the protest was organized by Extinction Rebellion, and I actually just stepped in. They were short one person. I've been in D.C. because I work for Move to Amend, which is a national campaign to amend the U.S. Constitution to end corporate personhood and get money out of politics. But obviously, there's very connected to climate change, because the reason why our elected officials haven't done anything about climate change is that they're in the pocket of multinational corporations, particular fossil fuel companies. And so I'm just really worried about what the future holds. And when the folks at Extinction Rebellion wanted to organize a brand new way to get Congress's attention, I was happy to step up last week.
Right. So you were there. You saw it all happen. We have video of it, but just tell us a little bit about it. People super glued themselves to the doors of Congress. What was going on?
Right. So there are three different buildings that all of the House members use for their offices. And then there are tunnels that connect those buildings underground to the Capitol where they go to vote. And so what we did last Tuesday is super glued our hands, one hand to the glass door on one side, and then on the other side, most of us were holding another person's hand that was also super glued to each other to block Congress from going to just a regular vote. Because a couple weeks ago, Bernie Sanders in the Senate and then AOC and Earl Blumenauer introduced an emergency resolution similar to the ones that have been passed in the UK and Canada, trying to declare that the climate situation is an emergency, a declaration of a climate emergency. And it hasn't moved anywhere. And so the folks at Extinction Rebellion were trying to draw attention to this. So it gave us an opportunity to pretty much see almost every single member of Congress face to face as they tried to pass by us to go and do their regular vote.
Hi, Caitlin, Brooke here. Now, something happened during this protest, and we have video of it. I want to show it, and then I want you to walk me through what happened.
Please. This entranceway is closed. Our politicians have chosen action.
Wow. Caitlin, what was going on there?
Yeah, so I was the woman who was in that video. And like I said, we were super glued on one hand to the glass doors and then each other. And that was Congressman Bob Gibbs, who's from Ohio. He incidentally takes a tremendous amount of money from fossil fuel corporations, $183,000 in his career to date. And when he tried to push through us, we were at that point letting people through because we determined it would be safer. And so people were passing underneath us and we were talking to them about why we need the emergency declaration. And he didn't want to pass underneath us. Obviously, he saw that that was a way to get through, but he wanted to break through us. So he first tried on one hand where we were together, And then he just went straight for my arm. And yeah, he ripped my hand off of the glass. It didn't end up breaking the skin, but it really, really, really hurt.
Oh, wow.
He certainly intended to cause me harm. You know, I was telling him, I'm glued to this door. And he said, I don't care. And ripped my hand off the glass.
So he did not have a policy discussion with you at that moment. Though I did do some research into previous statements he's made about climate change. He said in the past, I just don't buy into it. I think the whole thing is up in the air. I remember back in the 70s, they were talking about global cooling. They're thinking global warming now. I think the sun has more to do with it than anything. What is your response to this well-informed scientific position of Bob Gibbs?
Well, I mean, obviously he doesn't know what he's talking about. And, you know, right now the Arctic has fires, which is something that is incredibly rare. We have seen, you know, crazy weather all over the country, all over the world. And there's at this point no question whether climate collapse is currently happening, is the result of fossil fuel and carbon emissions caused by human beings. And we absolutely need to act. I mean, we needed to have acted for the last 30 years. And that's part of why we need to protest Congress, because many of those folks have been in there that long and have certainly known about this, and they have not done anything about it. And so, you know, I was there. I have a 7-year-old nephew and a 3-year-old nephew, and I'm very worried about their future. I'm very worried about all the animals that are going extinct and the millions of people who are going to be displaced and ultimately, you know, die because of something that was honestly entirely preventable if we had changed the course of things when scientists first started warning us about it. And so congressmen like Bob Gibbs, you know, they're not representing their constituents right now. They're representing giant multinational corporations. He's a member of ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, which basically writes legislation on behalf of corporations and hands them to our elected officials. And that's why there's a real connection with Move to Amend, because corporations are ruling us. They are basically making the fundamental public policy decisions for our country, and that's what's put us in this horrible situation when it comes to climate collapse.
So I just have a quick question, because I think a lot of people, as you mentioned, are worried about the future. And so for fellow progressives and activists, allies, you know, besides calling our representatives, what do you think people should be doing?
Well, Move to Amend has been passing ballot initiatives all over the country. So that's going directly to voters and then calling on Congress to pass our amendment. In terms of climate change, I think at this point, we need to be doing civil disobedience. And that was why I was happy to join the folks from Extinction Rebellion. And that organization, you know, their number one priority is to tell the truth on climate change and then to do whatever's necessary nonviolently to get our elected leaders to act. And at this point, you know, we have gone through the process of doing the petitioning and the calling. And around climate change, it hasn't made any difference. And many of the presidential candidates, what the ideas that they're putting forward, the proposals, won't get it done. So it's time for us to escalate. So next month, when the climate strikes are happening all over the world, called by literally children who are asking us to step up and defend their future, I hope all of your listeners will consider how far you're willing to go in terms of standing up for something that could not be more important.
And I hope all our viewers do as well. Caitlin Saposi-Belknap of the Move to Amend. I'm sorry you had to go through all that, but I'm very grateful for your activism. Thank you for joining us on the Damage Report.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, lots more for you.
No, you're gonna kill me.
I'm not gonna kill you.
You're gonna kill me. You're gonna kill me.
The man screaming there is named Tony Timpa. Now, this video was actually just released this week after a 3-year legal battle between the Dallas Morning News. They were battling the police department to get this video made public. It was just recently made public. This man in the video, Tony Timpa, he actually called 911, back in August of 2016. On that phone call, he asked the dispatcher for help, said that he was mentally ill, he had schizophrenia, and that he was scared. We do know that he said he hadn't taken his medication and he was not armed. He did not have a weapon. When officers got to the store he was at, a security guard actually had already handcuffed him. So I want you to keep that in mind as you watched this. He was already handcuffed at the time. He was standing. At one point, officers decide to further restrain him by lying him down in the grass on his stomach. His face was in the grass, and one of the officers had their knees on this man's back. And you can hear in this video, which is obviously very graphic, them making jokes as they're restraining him. Take a look.
Yacht club in Rockwall, that's pretty okay.
Will you let me go, please?
Hey, Tony, we're trying to help you out, man. Just relax.
Tempo was restrained for more than 13 minutes, and when he initially stopped responding, the officers were still laughing, making jokes about him, mocking him, talking about waking him up for school. They assumed he was asleep. When police later lift him onto a gurney, he's limp, and his eyes are partially open. Listen to the officers.
Is he knocked out, or he ain't dead, is he?
Nah, he just moves.
Oh, okay.
I think.
He didn't just die down there, did he?
I don't think he did.
Is he breathing? Hope I didn't kill him.
It's all this weed.
I love how this became a weed.
Yeah.
We ain't friends.
Unfortunately, Tony Tempa did pass away. A county autopsy report ruled Tempa died as a result of sudden cardiac death due to the toxic effects of cocaine and physiologic stress associated with physical restraint. The physicians who examined him ruled his death was a homicide. Also, the stress of being restrained and extreme physical exertion contributed to his demise, they wrote. So these police officers, let me just tell you this part. The evidence unearthed by Vicky Tempa, that's Tony's mother, and her lawyers, along with the Dallas Morning News and a local news station in Dallas, NBC 5, that led to an excessive force lawsuit in federal court, also an indictment of three of the officers involved, Kevin Mansell, Danny Vasquez, and Dustin Dillard. But in March, the Dallas County District Attorney dismissed the charges against them, and they returned to active duty the very next month. The officers previously claimed Tempa was aggressive. They said they only used the force necessary to prevent him from rolling into a busy street. And as you can see, for a lot of people, this video that took 3 years to come out contradicts that.
Yeah, it seems like they didn't want the video to get out,
right?
Because seeing is believing. Like, that's the thing. They would have to say, yeah, you saw it, but here are all the rules we have in place that makes it not misconduct by the officers. But that wouldn't hold up if people both saw this video and saw the judgment that they made after whatever non-court proceedings. The thing is now, since they didn't have the original prosecution, maybe it can happen again.
Right, and also our producer Angel found this breaking just right before the show started, that the Dallas Morning News not only got this video released, but they also got an audio of a Dallas Police Department disciplinary hearing with some of the officers, where the officers were actually saying that they mocked him as he was pinned to the ground, this 32-year-old man, Tony Tempa. They mocked him as he was pinned to the ground, and it was part of a strategy to get a response out of him.
Right. Was the strategy to get a response out of him also putting your knee on his back?
Right.
Also not responding to anything? And honestly, that is a terrible strategy.
Right.
Other strategies, I don't think that can possibly be a strategy that is taught at the police department. If it is, that's even worse.
Right.
But that's exactly what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is if you both, you can hear their excuses. Or they don't want you to see the actual evidence. But if you see both, if you hear their excuses and see the evidence, it makes their excuses ridiculous. And that's what they're most afraid of you coming to the realization of. It's just so disgusting. It's so disgusting to me that they were this dismissive and mean, even after it was pretty obvious that the man was dead.
And his face was in the grass. And just in any situation, you want someone to be aware enough to say, oh, hey, move him over. Turn his head, like we, you know, that keeps happening. And then what I keep going back to in this is that he called 911 for help.
Yep. And they And it's such a bro-y atmosphere, too.
Yeah.
It's just a bunch of dudes being like, haha, aren't we having a great time?
Yeah, you want people who are whose duty is to protect us to just have a little more compassion.
And it creates this feeling where, like, if there was someone there who did say, hey, guys, we need to stop and take this seriously, the bro-y atmosphere would completely discourage that anyway. But there wasn't even like a wet blanket in that situation to say, hey, we're killing this person.
Exactly.
Why does it need to be like that? It doesn't.
At all. I don't think so. Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break. We will be right back with much more. The FBI actually is saying something that I think a lot of people, normal people, have been saying in their own personal lives for a very long time. But they are saying it officially for the first time, and it has to do with a lot of conspiracy theories that have proven dangerous. We'll be right back. Hey there, welcome back. The FBI now actually considers fringe conspiracy theories as a domestic terrorist threat. They actually put out a 15-page memo, and in that memo, it warns anti-government, identity-based, and, fringe political conspiracy theories very likely motivate some domestic extremists to commit criminal, sometimes violent activity. The memo cites, it's 15 pages, as I said, but it cites, false conspiracy theories, QAnon and Pizzagate.
I agree with this report, except for the false part. For me, Q is a real person.
Oh, stop it.
And so even though there aren't any basements under certain pizza restaurants, in those basements that don't exist but do, hashtag go see Stranger Things for Upside Down, that's how I justify it. There are these, that's what's so crazy about this.
Right.
Is this, how crazy it is.
How crazy it is. Okay, so the memo, this 15-page bulletin, it's actually the first FBI product examining the threat of conspiracy theory-driven domestic extremists and lists instances in which suspects plotted or carried out deadly violence because of false fringe theories that they had found online. The FBI assesses these conspiracy theories very likely will emerge, spread, and evolve in the modern information marketplace, occasionally driving both groups and individual extremists to carry out criminal or violent acts, saying these targets are then subjected to harassment campaigns and threats by supporters of the theory and become vulnerable to violence or other dangerous attacks. And also, conspiracy theories being dangerous, it's nothing new at all. Mm-hmm. This memo acknowledges that, but it also emphasizes how today's information environment and crowdsourcing have changed the way the content more easily spreads and evolves, stating it is logical to assume that more extremist-minded individuals will be exposed to potentially harmful conspiracy theories, except ones that are favorable to their views and possibly carry out criminal or violent actions again as a result. Also, I just want to show you some QAnon supporters online who seem to feel, I don't know, betrayed by the federal government that they are, I guess, decided they are protecting in this theory.
No, you can show them to me, but I don't want to.
Look at some of these tweets. Because we have some interesting tweets to show you. I just want you to see how people who believe this. So Twitter user Travis View found this about
Invented the View.
The QAnon community. Let's look at some of these photos of these tweets we have. There you go. Here we go.
FBI for the first time has identified a fringe so here we go. And then it's just a dismissive attitude toward it. What the F? The FBI after us? Q soldier. And yeah, so mildly awkward, FBI just included QAnon in a domestic terrorist threat assessment. So here's their logic. And again, for the first time, I was kidding about
He's being sarcastic, right?
QAnon.
Somebody's totally
going to
clip that and use this.
No, so here's what it is built into their conspiracy theory is that you can't trust the FBI because of these deep state folks that are working so hard undercut the president.
I'm sorry, I misunderstood their made up.
So they're made up. They make it up, but built into their logic is, if the FBI says something, they're lying because they're trying to get the president. So if they say something like this, which is proven, so Pizzagate happened. Pizzagate, there was a man who went to the place that Pizzagate was supposed to be going on. He had an assault style weapon. And when he realized that he had been had by a conspiracy theory group, he literally just surrendered and said he made a, quote, ill-advised decision.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's happening here. These folks, and the ones seeding it are people who may or may not actually believe in the theory.
Right. So wait, Pizzagate wasn't proven. This memo says about Pizzagate.
So someone went, was like, Pizzagate's real. He goes to the pizza restaurant in DC where they're supposed to have a weird Hillary Clinton child sex cult in the basement.
Right.
There is no basement. There is no sex cult. He just says, oh my gosh, that was embarrassing.
Right.
And you would think that that would have some minor effect.
But it didn't at all.
But it doesn't. And it's not that these conspiracy theories are circulating. Conspiracy theories have always circulated. It's the number of people who actually believe them and then, worse and most specifically, try to act on them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's frustrating. And it's because of this breakdown of, you know, you used to see something in a newspaper, and if it was in a newspaper, you could believe it. If you saw it in a tabloid as you're checking out at the supermarket, you know it's ridiculous. There's also a bat boy on it. And it's like, bad boy strikes again. You're like, okay, this is made up. This is a joke and ridiculous. But people consume all their news in the same place now.
Mm-hmm.
So something from the New York Times will happen in your feed right before something from QAnon. And that legitimizes it. And so there are people out there who decide, oh, I'm going to take this seriously because it was in the same place. I read the words printed all in a row and Mark Zuckerberg put this on the internet.
Wasn't the synagogue shooter a QAnon supporter?
I don't know which one specifically, but there have been many that are.
The guy who went and shot and killed a mob boss.
Yes.
Believed in a conspiracy theory. I don't know if it has a specific name, but it was similar to QAnon.
Yeah. And so that's what's frustrating. And to all the QAnon conspiracy theorists out there, mm-hmm. if I can get through to you, what do you think makes more sense? The fact that someone is actually propagating, or that there is a deep state out to get everyone,
mm-hmm.
even though they're disproven at every single step of the way, or that there's this giant conspiracy out there that is actually working against it, and even though there is no actual proof.
Right. And you know what's so frustrating about this? That Jeanine Pirro, who was formerly a judge, which every time I say her name, that will just always be such proof that our criminal justice system just has issues.
Mm-hmm.
But
no, that's her first name.
And she...
Judge Reinhold.
She was on Fox News just the other day talking about that there was truth, that the deep state exists. Also a conspiracy theory.
Well, that's what
happens.
And
then the president retweeted it twice.
That's what we had Parker Malloy on to talk about.
Yeah.
Is that they start with something that's absolutely ridiculous and false and utterly disproven and indefensible. And no one can defend it. So they change the context in which it's used and then make it okay for in their minds to repeat what it was.
That's so frustrating.
And so they keep repeating it for days, weeks, and hours where you no longer need the whole context in which it originally appeared. They feel they can say words like deep state. You know, they're going to outlaw cows. These things that are so detached from any identifiable reality but it's somehow okay because now it's just lingo that the right uses to prove they're all on the same side. That's what's so frustrating about it. All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about this amazingly weird and racist story.
Yeah.
Don't go away.
Hey there. So a lot of people are upset right now after a picture went viral showing what appears to be a policy dictating hairstyles appropriate for black kids at a Georgia elementary school. It's outside of Atlanta. Here's the photo. I want you to look at the picture. It is, so on the top left corner there, it's appropriate haircuts. And basically you just see like a basic
Line up.
Yeah, look, it's got a sharp line up. And on the right and on the bottom, you see what is labeled inappropriate hairstyles. And what we have are just, I think, traditional fun hairstyles that are like culturally black. You've got like fun lines in the back of the hair, kind of like a little bit of a fro there, very shaped on the bottom, the two girls. The hairstyle on the right is what I wore in my hair from first through fourth grade.
Yes.
Easily, just the little pigtails with barrettes all over. And on the left down there, it's just cornrows. Just like cornrows with like some little color braided in them. But those are like protective hairstyles for black girls down at the left.
What do you mean by protective hairstyles?
Like it keeps your hair healthy so that your hair doesn't break out, break off, or get damaged. So putting them in braids. I think like a braid is a protective hairstyle really for anybody. But it's something that like little black girls, like you put in their hair for multiple days because it's, you know, it keeps their hair from damage.
It's just so weird that the only appropriate versus inappropriate hairstyle photos are of black people.
Right.
Like that.
The only people whose hair traditionally is policed.
Is it weird?
Are little black kids.
I've gotten to a point where like I know that there's so much racism out there. Mm-hmm. And I'm utterly disappointed and frustrated with everyone.
Yeah.
And it's just like its own specific breed of disappointment and frustration when they're not even like realizing they should be masking it in some way. Like even do me the decency of trying to lie to me.
Exactly. You know? Everything like points to like people still believing that like things that are that blackness is an other.
Yeah, mix a white kid in there. Mix a white kid in there who is doing, you know, to cover your tracks.
Like, code your racism a little bit better.
A little bit. Because otherwise, yeah. It's just like, this is bad.
Right. So this happened at Narvi J. Harris Traditional Theme School. That's in Decatur, Georgia, which is part of the DeKalb County School District.
From.
Your dad is from Decatur?
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool. So look at this here. Many Georgia schools opened today, which is also really bizarre. Georgia schools opened yesterday, a lot of them. So, and racial profiling is still present. That's from Atlanta educator Jason B. Allen. That was posted on Twitter in a tweet accompanying also the photo saying, imagine being a black boy greeted by this. Sadly, this shows systemic bias against all black boys. And district officials actually put out a statement saying the photo does not reflect their system-wide policy. Here's part of it. The images depicted in this post in no way reflect a DeKalb County School District policy regarding appearance. Officials say, they say this was a miscommunication at the school level and is being handled by school leadership. Non-traditional schools at the DeKalb County School District sometimes have the option to enforce dress code and style standards. So are they going to shut this down?
That's how you code.
Right.
That's how you code something where you're like, oh, that's not an official thing. Also, they have some leeway to enforce. Definitely not our fault. They're
right.
Doing that. But we're distancing ourselves. That's the kind of expert coded racism that at least they are trying to do you the courtesy of hiding behind. But the like, hey, black kids, here you go. This is okay hair. This is not. Like, that is so, so strange.
Right.
Especially like the things where you at least articulate some kind of understanding of the way that why hair is ever done in braids.
Right.
I think it should be illegal for white people to get cornrows.
Dreads, I think dreads. I'm sorry. I'm just kidding. That was a joke. That was a joke.
Unless you're on a cruise ship. If you're on a cruise ship, definitely have someone braid your hair into cornrows, then come back and share it with the class for 2 days. That's okay. With the beads.
With the
still
beads,
on.
You gotta find somebody.
Down the hall. What's that clanking? Oh, that's Brenda. Brenda's back from
And also
from
I think that like encouraging like normalizing black hair. First of all, I don't think like hairstyle should be part of a school dress code. I already think I understand many reasons why schools have dress codes. They want the kids in like a uniform. I get that. But policing hair is part of that. It's so problematic, and not only just because it's just bad.
Well, what generally. You're trying to do in enforcing your uniform standard mm-hmm. is to kind of get rid of any way people can be otherized, because it's you or people can be marginalized. It's like everyone's wearing the same thing, but in putting up codes that are just for black kids, mm-hmm. you are otherizing them.
Absolutely.
You are stigmatizing them. You are saying these people aren't uniform and that's not okay. With a complete ignorance as to why people do their hair certain ways.
This is ridiculous. But we saw that there was a uniform in the military. People are fighting for our freedoms. And black women had, you know, their hair was policed. I know we have to go though, so.
Okay.
All right, we've got to go. This has been more fun than usual?
Really? Because I saw racism and death in the show, and you seem to see positivity, and that's why I respect you.
Thank you for watching.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.